William Cooper, God moves in a mysterious way. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Deep in unfathomable minds of never-failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take, the clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. Grace and peace. The Quorum Deo podcast is back, and I want to thank you for tuning in. I know I've been on somewhat of a break recently. I took an extended time off to focus on some things here locally, as well as do some traveling for ministry and just even for vacation. And here I am. I'm finally back here and wanting to continue the series that I left off with. If you remember in the last episode, I told you guys that my wife and I have been going through somewhat of a trying season. And in the midst of that trying season, I wanted to share with you guys some of the various things, the lessons that the Lord has been reteaching me or reemphasizing in my life. And on the last episode, we talked about one of those things. And then this episode, I'm going to talk about another thing. In the beginning of this, I read William Cooper's poem, which God Moves in a Mysterious Way, where he talks about the providence of God, and sometimes the providence of God is not necessarily something that, you know, when we experience it, doesn't actually feel pleasurable, but actually feels more like a trial, more difficult and challenging. And in that poem, he encourages us that even within those times where it seems as if God's providence is frowning upon us, that God is actually still rejoicing in us and rejoicing in the work that he is doing in us. And so that's what I want to talk about on this episode, is how do we respond when those scenarios, those frowning providences come our way. And that's something that I've had to deal with personally and that I like to talk to you guys about. I remember it was C.S. Lewis in his book, Christian Reflections, who wrote that history is a story that's written by the finger of God. And I absolutely believe that's true. I believe that God is sovereign over all things. He's sovereign over history. He is the writer of all of our stories, all of our narratives. And one of the challenges does come when we are confronted with the reality that we do not write our own stories, but rather God writes our story. And many times if we were to write our own stories, there's those stories that we would write for ourselves would be filled with happiness. They would be filled with joy. They'd be filled with blessings. They'd be filled with miracles. They'd be filled with answered prayers. But they would not be necessarily filled with the very thing in which God desires for us, which I'll talk about in just one second. And what God is doing in our lives is that he is seeking to accomplish certain things, and he accomplishes those things through certain means and certain trials and certain realities that we experience in our life. And again, and when he writes the story does not always go the way that we think it should go, but it always goes the way that he most desires, which is ultimately the way that most blesses us in that and makes us the most like Christ. And so when I think about these realities, I think about Jeremiah, to be specific, one of my favorite texts found in Jeremiah 32, specifically verse 32, let's see here, verse 34, 37. And so in Jeremiah 32, verse 37, it says here, "Behold, I will gather them from all the countries to which I drove them in my anger and my wrath and in great indignation. I will bring them back to this place, and I will make them dwell in safety. And they shall be my people, and I will be their God. I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me forever, for their own good and the good of their children after them. I will make with them an everlasting covenant, that they will not turn away from doing good to them. Excuse me, that I will not turn away from doing good to them. And I will put the fear of me in their hearts, that they will not turn away from me. I will rejoice in doing them good, and I will plant them in this land in faithfulness with all my heart and with all my soul. And so what the Lord says here in this text is, one, that he will make an everlasting covenant, a new covenant, that he will not turn away from doing good to his people. He will not turn away from doing good to them. And so we know from this text, and that's Jeremiah 32:40, that God has made an everlasting covenant with his people. And in this everlasting covenant that he's made, he will not turn away from doing good to them. And so we know then that no matter what we go through, whether or not they're frowning providences or whether or not they're happy providences or whatever trials that we may go through, that God is seeking to do good to us because he promises that he will not turn away from doing good to us. But I think that one of the things that is challenging is how we define that good. And this is what I'm talking about. If we were to write our story for ourselves, we can think about a lot of goods for us. And if we were to write our own stories, we would write a story that consisted of all those good things, all those goods. And yet what we need to understand is that God has a specific good for us in mind that he is seeking to do, and that he promises through covenant that he will not turn away from pursuing. And he says he'll do it with all his heart and all his soul. And so what is the good that God is seeking to accomplish in us with all his heart and all his soul, which he has promised that he will not turn away from doing good? It is to plant us in the land in faithfulness. Now we need to understand what the Bible talks about when it talks about promises of land. Many different theological traditions have come up with error when they've misunderstood the God's covenant promise that was in regards to land, the land promises of God. Many people have concluded that what that means, that there's going to be a new physical Jerusalem, or that there's going to be Israel is going to be restored, specifically the nation of Israel, and you know all these kinds of things. Now, I believe that the land that he's talking about, and the fulfillment of the land promise, if you would, is the new earth. It does not end in anything on this side of heaven, any kind of nation or land. It ultimately is culminated in Revelations that talks about a new heavens and a new earth. The land promise is the inheritance of a whole new earth that the people of God are going to inherit because of God's covenant faithfulness. And so the land that God is speaking of placing his people in is ultimately heaven. It's ultimately the new earth. It's ultimately placing them in a land which they will inhabit in their glorified bodies as they are like Christ. And so the good that God is seeking to do for his people is the good of making them like Jesus so that they will be able to dwell in the land in faithfulness, in heaven, in faithfulness. And so this is important to understand. Regardless of what issues that we go through, regardless of what struggles we go through, regardless of, as William Cooper put it, whatever frowning providences that we may be going through, God is hiding a smiling face because God is actually, as this text says, rejoicing over doing good to us. And God is smiling because he knows that even though it may be bitter, what we are experiencing, as the poem says, and this bud may have a bitter taste, he knows that the flower will be sweet because the flower will be Christ likeness. And as William Cooper says in his poem, that in the midst of the bitter providences that we can experience, it may not be clear what we are actually experiencing this for, why are you having to go through this, but there is coming a day where God will be his own interpreter and he will make plain what it is that he was seeking to accomplish. What is it that he was seeking to accomplish? He is seeking to accomplish the Christ conformity of his saints so that they will dwell in a land in the image of Christ and finally be able to see him face to face. And so what we need to understand when we are experiencing these challenges, we're experiencing the various difficulties or things that are happening in our lives, these providences that don't go the way that we would hope that they would go, or the way that we would write them ourselves, is we need to recognize that there is a greater author that is writing our stories. We need to recognize that our author who is writing our stories is the omniscient one. He's the one who knows all things. He's the one who is abounding in love. He is love. He is beauty. He is truth. He desires and rejoices over doing what is the most good for us, which is making us like his beloved son. And even when we are experiencing things that may be bitter experiences, that their ultimate purpose of them is something that will lead to our eternal rejoicing. And that's just something that is critical. And when we go through trials, when we go through difficult seasons, it is that reality that we need to make sure that we understand. We need to be able to say, I did not write this story. I would not have written this for myself, but I know that the author has written a greater story than I would write myself. That me as a sinner would write a story that seeks to be most pleasurable to me, but at the same time, God knows what truly would be most pleasurable, because God knows that the greatest longing of my heart as a born-again believer is to be like his son, is to be pleasing to him. And so my desires are actually nowhere near as great as the desires God has for me. We go through difficult trials. We go through bitter providence because the author of our stories, our Father in heaven, desires more for us and greater goods for us than we actually desire for ourselves. And so I'm here with my baby, so as you can hear, she's making a lot of noise in the background. I'm just going to let it play. But this is something that is so crucial, is so critical to understand as believers, is that we, as Christians, have this tendency to desire to write our own story, but even more so, when things don't go the way that we would have them go, end up becoming discouraged, end up becoming depressed, end up becoming anxious. We end up accusing God or accusing other people. And what that ultimately proves is what I say about adultery, idolatry. Idolatry is when you want something so bad that you're willing to sin to get it, or when it's threatened to be removed from you, you respond sinfully. And when we respond sinfully due to the fact that things are not going the way that we would desire them to go, what that proves is that our own ambitions, our own desires, our own reality of how we think things should go have become an idol, because we desire our story to be the way that we want it more than we desire God to be God and to write our story for us and to trust in him as the perfect author. And so that's one of the things that I've been have had to be reminded of, you know, in the past months, is that how much, even without even knowing it, I was depending on my own story. I had my own story of how things would be written out, how things would go. And it didn't take long after being approached with another story greater than my own and ultimately different, that it didn't feel good, that I was challenged with the reality of how much weight am I placing in my own narrative. It's one thing to have a story. It's one thing to have things planned out. That's okay. It's not even wrong to have things planned out, to plan ahead. The question is, when your plans don't work out, or when they're deviated from, how do you respond? Can you still be joyful? Can you still rejoice when God redirects your story? Or when your story is redirected, is it as if the ground has been removed from underneath you? Because if it is that the ground feels like it's being removed from underneath you when God reorients or redirects your story, what that means is that you are placing too much stake in your narrative. You are placing too much stake in how you think things should have gone. And because they did not go that way, you respond in a way that is ultimately, in many ways, can even be considered a temper tantrum. As it's, this is how I wanted to go. It did not go this way. So this is how I'm going to respond, with unthankfulness. When we recognize that God is writing our story, and he's writing our story with a specific purpose in mind, that specific purpose being our glorification, our being planted in the land in faithfulness, we truly recognize and truly embrace the reality that our stories, however they unfold, are written by the finger of God, then even amidst bitter providence, we are able to be thankful. Even when things don't go the way that we desire, we are able to be thankful. Even when things go the complete opposite of the way that we would hope that they would go and even anticipated them are going, our thankfulness, our gratitude remains unchallenged, because our gratitude and thankfulness is in the one who saved us. It's not in the life that we anticipate on having because we are saved. And that's a very important distinction, and that's a very important reality to recognize. It makes all the difference in the world how we respond and how we engage in the midst of suffering, in the midst of trials, or in the midst of loss. Can we lose? Can we suffer and still be thankful? We can if our portion is in God and not in our stories that we write for ourselves.